chat, because as I always say to you, and it's not a lie, I'm honest, it's the highlight of my week. I only get to do it every 4 or 5 months, but that's okay. And it's always really fun, so I'm glad that I'm back. Reason number two, today is WrestleMania, and I'm very excited for WrestleMania.
Oh yeah, all right, you're right.
I've been following the WWE for a long time, and it's kind of a rule of thumb, and it's always held up. It's funny. Every 4 or 5 years, there's an all-time classic WrestleMania. So if you look back at, like, the last 3 or 4 great ones, there's WrestleMania 19, which was the last Steve Austin and The Rock of their trilogies, their trilogy of main events. That was the last one, which was their best match. Not the best story, but the best match, and that WrestleMania as a whole, 19, was pretty awesome. Then you fast forward to around 5 or 6 years later, WrestleMania 25, which is the unforgettable, all-time great Undertaker, Shawn Michaels match. That was 25. And then WrestleMania 30, which was the culmination of the 8-month journey of Daniel Bryan to the WWE Championship. And that was a great WrestleMania as a whole. It started with Hulk Hogan, The Rock, and Steve Austin on the same ring, which was insane. And it ended with Daniel Bryan lifting the 2 championships. And everything in between was pretty sweet, too. And since then, we haven't had a great WrestleMania. It's been pretty like mediocre. Last year was fine, but it wasn't great. But like, it's been 5 years since an all-time classic WrestleMania, so I think we get it tonight.
I'm hoping so. I was so big into wrestling when I was a kid, when I was a teenager. It just kind of faded away from me as I got older. I need to get back into it.
I always get back into it around WrestleMania time. Like, I'm the biggest wrestling fan between January and April, and then I don't watch it anymore until January again. It's always the same.
But gotcha.
I'm all the way back. The build-up has been pretty bad. Like, the stories that they told until tonight are pretty bad. But I think that the matchups are so great, and there are so many great actual wrestlers that are going to compete against each other, that have great chemistry against each other. Like, there's no way that the matches are going to be bad. And almost every wrestler on the card today is a pretty good storyteller, so they're going to tell some nice stories in the ring, too. I can't wait for Daniel Bryan, Kofi Kingston. That's going to be awesome. The women's match, which is the main event, first ever main event, is as a women's match, which is pretty cool. So it's going to be nice. Very excited for WrestleMania.
Awesome.
So that's reason number two. Reason number three, Manchester City in the FA Cup final.
Your other team.
Yes, big win against Brighton yesterday. Pretty bad performance for Manchester City standards, which is like the best performance of the season for any other team, basically. But it's pretty bad for City standards. But still beat Brighton. FA Cup final. The quadruple is still on. I can't believe we actually have a shot of winning every single major championship in England, which is almost impossible. And I think we have a pretty good shot. And reason number four, Barcelona have won La Liga, so everything is great today.
Yes, congratulations on once again prohibitively winning La Liga. It's done now. 11 points with 7 weeks to go, and yeah, that's great. Everything is just great over here in Atletico Land, as it has been for the past month. Yeah, it's been,
and it's actually 12 points if you think about it, because Barca have the head to head.
Yeah, it's 12 points to go.
So, awesome. Even if it's tied in points at the end of the season, Barca win La Liga. So, Atletico actually need to have 12 more points than Barca. We're only 21 to play, which is impossible. Especially with Barca's schedule, it's pretty nice. There's only one tough game, which is Getafe, and it's at home. So, it's over.
Yeah, Atletico still have Valencia, and they still have Sevilla as well.
Espanyol away, which is a tough game this season. So, yeah. Barca need 10 points. 10 points without anything Atletico do was going to guarantee the title.
Probably
so even if Atletico win now, Barca only need 10 points. And they're going to get it, I think, in the next 4 weeks.
Yeah, and you look at the rest of Atletico's schedule, I mean, motivation or otherwise, there are a couple toughies here. Celta at home next week, that's basically a gimme considering how bad Celta have been this year. Eibar away is going to be tough. Espanyol away might be tricky. Valencia have been great lately. Sevilla at home. You know, Sevilla aren't very good away, but they have some really good players. Yeah, there are still some tough games here. Oh, and they end the season at Levante, and they very rarely win at Levante. So not only is the title gone, but second place is no guarantee either. Atletico might actually really screw this up and finish third. And with the possible tweak to the Super Cup format, the Super Copa format, where the top two in La Liga would play, that would be really bad. They finished
third. Yes.
Second place matters more now.
Yes. I think it's the stupidest thing in the world is to tweak the Super Copa. Like, what they did this season was actually good. A one game off in a neutral stadium, but they screwed up because it wasn't played in Spain.
Yeah.
If Barça Sevilla played a one game playoff in Spain, it was the perfect Super Copa. It's what the Super Copa should be. Every Super Cup in every major country, it's like that. It's one game in a neutral stadium. Like, it's not hard to do. But, of course, it's not football. It's La Liga. So they find a way to screw it up.
It can't
that's
be
what they, That's it's what
got,
they do.
It's got to be something else.
It's got to be something else. I love that kid, by the way. That's a nice kid.
I'm sure he is. His commercials are annoying, but I'm sure he's a nice kid.
Yeah, he's not a great actor, but he's a nice kid.
Sure, he's a good guy.
Seriously, his acting is pretty bad. Like, he's trying really hard. And I guess you deserve some effort by, like, it's La Liga. Like, you can't hire a better actor. Like, try, like, anyway.
So,
by the way, what's up with the mom letting the kid travel on his own to Spain?
You know what? I hadn't thought about that. You're right. Well, maybe he went with friends.
Yeah, but they're in the cab, right? I assume that's his mom. They're in the cab and he's coming back to Asia from a trip to Spain, I guess.
And like there is no communication between child and mother?
Yeah, and they're speaking in English if they're in Asia. Anyway,
there are questions.
There are a lot of questions. My biggest question is, what type of mom lets an 8-year-old kid go to Spain on his own? Like, is she a divorcee and the kid's dad is in Spain? That's a problem too. Like, I have a lot of questions. But that kid is nice, but La Liga isn't. That's what I'm saying.
I missed this. I missed having you on the show.
Me too.
This is why. Okay, Saturday at Camp Nou, Barcelona 2, Atletico Madrid 0. I've already congratulated you on winning La Liga yet again. Yawn. But there were things happened in this game, Renato. Things occurred. Cards were shown. Goals were scored very late on. General thoughts on what we saw Saturday night in Catalonia.
First of all, I don't think there's any question about the red card.
No question at all.
I can't debate with the red card if it's not a foul. If it's Diego Costa saying something to the referee, then it's the referee's discretion. You can discuss whether or not he's too sensitive, but you don't know what was said. So if Diego Costa said something to the referee and the referee thought it was enough to give him a red card, you can't debate. Like,
yeah.
The red card is not a reason. It's not a quote-unquote excuse for Atletico losing. Like, I didn't even see that debate, but I'm just saying if anyone wants to use the red card excuse, I'm sorry, it's not there. Like, Diego Costa's, and it's Diego Costa saying something, so you assume it was over the line because he tends to do that.
Yeah, that is his history.
Yeah, so you can argue that if it was Messi saying the same things, would the referee send him off? Maybe not. But if it was Luis Suarez saying the same thing to the referee would have sent him off because of the history. So I don't think there's any debate there with the red card. But talking about the game, I thought Barca started pretty well. Like, the two biggest chances in the first 25 minutes, the two biggest chances of the game until Diego crossed the red card were Barca. The Jordi Alba shot against the post, and the play where Coutinho left Godin on the ground. That was such a sweet moment to see Diego Godin on the ground, because he's such a good defender that it's actually weird to see him on the ground on the receiving end of a dribble move so sweet like that. And then Oblak made a great save, which of course Oblak can't touch a ball, can't get close to the ball against Juventus, but against Barca he has a great game. Of course that happened. Against Cristiano Ronaldo, disappears. Against Barca, he's the best goalkeeper of all time.
The Oblak agenda lives on.
It's not an agenda. It's the truth. Is there any debate? Can you say anything about what I just said?
He's the best goalkeeper on the continent.
Was he the best goalkeeper in the continent against Juventus?
That wasn't his fault.
Did he get close to Cristiano Ronaldo's penalty?
I mean, no.
He went the other way.
That was Angel Correa's fault.
Because, of course, I'm talking about the penalty. When Cristiano Ronaldo kicked the penalty, did it go the other way? Yes.
Yes, because it always does.
Exactly. Did he go the other way on Coutinho's shot from the penalty spot? No. So, what's the debate? Like, he always is the best goalkeeper in the world against Barca. And then against Cristiano Ronaldo's team, he sucks. Like, it's... Anyway. So, the two biggest chances of the game... came before the red card were Barca's, and Barca at that point, by the first Oblak save and the Coutinho chance, Barca really were dominating the game at that point.
By the way, I still don't know how Alba missed that chance off the woodwork. That messy pass was just even by his standards, that was unbelievable.
I mean, I don't really expect Alba to score. That's not who he is. If it was like Sergio Roberto, it would have been a goal, because Sergio Roberto has more of an eye for goal and is actually in the box a lot more with the intention of scoring. That's not really Alba's game, so you can't really fault him there. Like, I wasn't surprised that he missed, to be honest. I was sad, but it wasn't surprised or angry. That's just not who he is. But at that point, Atleti, first 5 to 10 minutes, had some nice moments of possession. Both fullbacks were going forward. There was a cross that Diego Costa headed over the bar, I think. But by that Coutinho chance, Barca were really the best team. And then I was shocked by Simeone. That was kind of the best Simeone coaching performance against Barca, non-Champions League, that I've seen in a long time. He takes off a fullback and brings on Correa, because he knows it has Thomas Partey, who has played right back before. So he just puts him there, which is a really good decision. And then Atleti go into a 4-3-2 formation because they still want to attack because they need to win.
Yeah.
Because what a lot of coaches do, almost every coach, when a guy's sent off, they're just going to a 4-4-1 and don't want to concede. He actually did the opposite. He went 4-3-2 to attack and pressed Barca with 10 men, which he wasn't doing with 11, which is very surprising to me. And then he doubled down after halftime. He survived the first half. Then at halftime, he doubled down. He took Felipe Luis off with Morata, and then Saul went to left back. And then they became even more attacking and more dangerous. So it was a great coaching performance by Simeone. His players just couldn't put it together in the final third. And then I thought Valverde was really slow with his substitutions. Like, it became very clear after the Diego Costa red card that was not the game for Artur. Artur's game is the one against Manchester United on Wednesday, when they're going to face an English team that's going to run up and down, and Artur is going to calm the game down and control the tempo. That's his game. Against Atleti, on Saturday, you need a more creative, more dynamic, a quicker, faster player, and that was Malcolm. That was very clear.
That's where Malcolm came in.
And Valverde took a long time to realize that should have been a halftime substitution. He waited 15 minutes to do it, And in those 15 minutes, there was a sense that maybe Aleti might get a goal on a set piece. They did have a set piece chance with Rodri.
Rodri, yeah, about 15 minutes from time, Rodri had a header just over the bar. It was a great chance, and that was really the best chance Atletico had all game.
Yeah, and that was kind of the moment I was expecting. I was like, yeah, the Malcolm is not coming on yet. He was on the pitch already by that chance, but the chance came after Atleti already had a few crosses into the box. So it started to become nervous that they might take this one. And then Luis Suarez, which was getting on my nerves the whole game, he couldn't make a pass, he couldn't make a cross, he couldn't shoot. His first touch was awful. And then he comes up with the most beautiful curling shot you'll see all season. And not even Jan Oblak, the best goalkeeper in the continent, not even he could get to that ball, even though he tried really hard.
That was the only type of effort, that and Messi's goal, which was just absurd, and he didn't need to do that. Why did he need to do that? The Suarez goal was like the only type of shot that was going to beat Oblak. It took a really special effort, because Oblak was just on his game. He was magnificent.
Yeah, it was the out-of-nowhere, perfectly placed shot that was going to beat him, and Luis Suarez came up with it. And then that was the Messi goal straight from kickoff that Barca robbed the ball, because the broadcast came with Messi already on the counter, so I didn't really see what happened.
I didn't see who lost it, but yeah, the camera came back right as Messi was over the halfway line.
Yeah, and then the thing Messi does every game that I still don't figure out why people still don't understand that. I guess just because they're desperate that Messi is close to the goal and they have to do something. But like after Messi beat Jimenez, great effort by Jimenez, by the way, but Messi still beat him because he's Messi. There were three Atleti defenders in front of Messi, I think. And they're all waiting for him to do something, and Messi's not even looking at him. Messi's looking at Oblak the whole time. He's just taking the ball, moving, waiting for Oblak. Oblak goes one way, Messi just passes the ball to the other.
God, it was
He does that every absurd. Game.
It was
That's
absurd.
What he does. He doesn't see the defense in front of him. He's looking at the goalkeeper. And it was just beautiful. That goal was beautiful.
I think it was. Like, even though I'm biased, I think, neutrally speaking, that was just... He's ridiculous. That's just what Messi does. He's an alien. That's kind of what he does. And the game ended there. And I think from an Atletico perspective, the game ended.
By the way, before you go on.
Yeah.
I did this on my recap of the game on Barca Blaugranas, and I want to say to you, huge congrats to Atletico. Like, they fought like warriors the whole game.
Yeah, that's what I was going
to
say.
And they wanted to win. Like, they weren't satisfied with the clean sheet, even down 10 men. They wanted to win the game. And Simeone kept putting attacking players on the pitch, wanting to win the game. And even though they had no fullbacks and they had three strikers with 10 men, they were still organized. And it still took Barca two great efforts to beat them. So, huge congrats. They are deservedly the second best team in the league this season, and they played like it. Definitely did.
That's kind of where I was going to go, is that from an Atletico perspective, the game ended when Costa got sent off for insulting the referee's mother, basically. It was really, it only felt like it was going to be a matter of time before Barca did something, but Atletico held out for about an hour. I think it was, if only they had done this in Turin against Juve, we'd be previewing a Champions League quarterfinal today instead. Atletico were brave, they were valiant, they played great considering the circumstances. Oblak made some just huge saves, particularly the save on Suarez just after the hour. That was tremendous. That was, I think, the highlight of his day. I mean, Barca had 10 shots on target, Oblak saved 8 of them. It's more work than he usually gets. It's understandable, though, considering the circumstances. As you said, I think Cholo deserves a lot of credit for going more attacking, thinking more proactively, more progressively than he usually does in games of this magnitude. We've seen in Madrid derbies this season, with the other huge game on Atleti's fixture list, with the other members of the Big Three, we've seen Chola be a lot more conservative in that particular fixture. This time, not so much. I was pleasantly surprised by... I was a little confused as to why Arias was coming off in the first half when he's a defender, but Correa played fine. Morata came on, tried to... Morata's played really well for the most part since he's come over, and I think he did fine again. Overall, it was just... It was impressive that Atleti didn't stop fighting. They kind of brought back that old mentality that we have been waiting for them to bring back, even if only just for this game. They played better with 10 men than they did with 11. I mean, I thought there were some positive moments early on where they were taking the game. There was one point inside the first 20 minutes where both teams had attempted the same amount of passes, which is crazy. Like, what world are we living in? But then Atleti kind of settled down and remembered who they were. It's still... This was a fine performance, considering how it came about. If Costa had stayed on the pitch, who knows what would have happened. Maybe Simeone would have been more conservative in the end. But they played better with 10 than they did with 11. And I think... Listen, even if Atletico had won this game, the league was probably still going to be just out of their reach. It would have made things interesting, but the league has basically been out of their reach for a while. This officially does it, really. Second place is still up for grabs, but I think Atleti left it all out there at Camp Nou, and these things happen there. It's like Atleti are being punished for winning a league title there 5 years ago. Seven players sent off in the last 11 games there for Atletico.
And I don't remember all the games they're talking about, but I read that stat and I thought, wow, that's weird.
Yeah, I was trying to think of all the ejections. Felipe Luis for going in high on Messi about 3 years ago. I think Godin got sent off in that game too. Then Costa, that's three right off the bat.
Yeah, but, like, I don't remember, like, an outrageous one. Like, I don't think Atleti were ever robbed at Camp Nou. Like, red cards always are bad, but, like, I don't remember one. Again, it's hard to remember all of them, but like, the Felipe Luis one you were talking about, that should have been a double red card. Like, he tried to break Messi's knee.
Oh, I agree.
In front of Barca's bench.
Yeah, like, that was horrible.
He tried to send a message, and that was just ridiculous. He almost caused a fight between Luis Enrique and Simeone. I never seen Luis Enrique so angry in my life as it was at that moment. And I remember Luis Enrique as a Barca player, and he was pretty fiery. But he wanted to fight Cholo right there. And I think that was Godin was sent off because I remember Barca. It was Atleti took the lead, I think, in that game. And then Felipe Luis was sent off. Barca came back 2-1. And then as Atleti were kind of pushing for an equalizer, Godin got sent off in the second half. I think that was what happened.
Yeah.
But I remember that game, and I remember thinking, wow, those red cards seem weird. I think Godin was a double yellow card, maybe.
I believe it was. I can't remember, though.
Yeah, but like I honestly can't say, and you know if I thought I would say, but I can't say that I think Atleti were robbed at Camp Nou. But like you said, yeah, it's weird that ever since they won La Liga Camp Nou, it's been a terror going there. Unless it's the Champions League where they get a draw and then in the other game they go and qualify.
We'll always hang that over your heads. We'll always have that.
No, I have it myself. Like, when it's a La Liga game, I'm like, yeah, we're going to win or we're probably going to get a draw. It's not the Champions League, so Atleti can't beat us. If it's not a Champions League, they can't touch us.
I mean, you're not wrong.
It's crazy.
You're not wrong.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. If it's not a Champions League, Atleti can't touch Barca. It's absolutely insane.
And there was debate over this red card to your earlier point. Like, the referee was too sensitive or it only warranted a yellow. I mean, it's the referee's discretion, so I don't know how much value it does to argue it if you're on Twitter. Like, I don't know what kind of value it offers because it's done. And knowing Costa's reputation, he probably did say what it is rumored that he said.
Yeah, if it's someone on Twitter, if they're on the pitch and Diego Costa says to them what he said to Manzano, can you really fault Manzano if it's you? Like, if it's you, if it's your significant other or you're a member of the family that Diego Costa is insulting to your face, are you not going to react? Like, it's difficult. I mean, I'm sorry. It's hard to debate that.
I think it is, too. And
you can't say that Barca won just because of that one. You can't. You just can't. You can't say that Atleti deserved better, that the way that they played with 10 men, that deserved a better result. But the fact that they went down to 10 men, the circumstances that led to that are not the reason why they lost the game.
I mean, in the end, I think Barca ran out deserved winners. Atleti, they played great, but they, like I said, they were already down to 10. They had been down to 10 for a while. Costa's irresponsibility and immaturity, once again on display this season. It's just been a nightmare for him. I don't think his return to Atletico could have gone any worse than it has gone.
He's been bad.
Other than in the Super Cup in August, it's just been a complete disaster. I think Atleti have got to find a way to move on from him in the summer. I know Simeone still loves him and wants him in the team next year, but I think it's irresponsible to keep him around. He's going to be 31 years old. He's on big wages. He's not good anymore. I think Atleti have to explore moving on from him. They're going to take a huge loss on him in terms of his transfer fee, but this is just yet another example of Costa just not being all there. It's just been a disaster for him this season.
By the way, speaking of transfers, yeah. I was kind of thinking that now, like in the last, over the last year and a half, is Rodri the only really good transfer Atleti have made?
He's the best.
It's like
one.
Gelson Martins is not there anymore.
Oh, I know. I love Gelson. Cholo never gave him a chance. And I've complained about
Diego
that before.
Diego Costa has been a disaster. Morata has been okay.
Yeah, I've liked Morata. He's been fine. I have not had a problem with that. Rodri, Santiarias has been good as well. He hasn't been,
oh, yes. Yes.
He hasn't been amazing, but he's been really good.
Vitolo, poor guy. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Honestly, this might sound crazy, but the only reason he's not going instead of Gelson is because he knows La Liga, so maybe that's why Simeone wants to keep him around.
And Atleti paid $40 million for him too.
Yeah. So, but like Gelson seemed like such a perfect signing. But like, and again, it's the thing that I talked about with you. I don't know if the last podcast, but certainly the other one before that. Like, you can't play Koke and Saul on the wings. I'm sorry. They're the two best central midfielders in Spanish football. The two together are better than Thiago from Bayern. Like, it's the Spanish midfield should be Rodri, Saul, and Koke. And they have that at Atleti. And they don't play in central midfield together. That doesn't make sense.
Saul has played left back half the year.
Are you kidding me?
This is why he wants to leave, because he's been playing left back half the year.
Guess what? If he goes, is Manchester City really the rumor?
Yeah, and City have been linked.
If it's him and his David Silva's replacement, watch him destroy the Premier League in central midfield.
I'm gonna have nightmares about it, because he's going to just run riot in the Prem, because he's a great player.
Seriously, and that's why I'm talking about. That was the first time Simeone impressed me as a coach, because he actually wanted to attack. And guess what? After he took off Arias for Correa, guess what Atleti did? They had a three-man midfield of Rodri, Koke, and Saul. Guess what? That was their best period on the pitch.
What a coincidence.
Like, it's not hard, man. It's not hard. That's crazy. I'm those guys. You play those guys on the wings. Fine, you're finished second in La Liga again. Like, what's the point? If you go to Turin with that three-man midfield against Juventus' three-man midfield, and their three-man midfield, by the way, was Pjanic, Matuidi, and Bernardeschi, which is worse than your three-man midfield, you don't have a better chance? Really?
I think if they'd gone down to 10 in Italy, they probably would have been different. They actually might have looked like this, but alas.
And like I said, I mean, that one, like I said, I was only impressed with Simeone. That was the first time. Because he actually played three players in positions where they make sense. Like, because when this the Atleti squad that started this season was first put together, I was like, man, this makes a lot of sense. Like, if you make a three-man midfield, Rodri, Koke, and Saul, and then up front, Griezmann in the middle as a false nine, that makes all the sense in the world. And then Gelson and Vitolo by his side, you got a really good team. He never played that. And
Cholo just doesn't think that way.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
This is not how we're wired.
You have the three best central midfielders in Spanish football, and they don't play together. I'm sorry. I would trade my Barcelona midfield for that one right now. I'm telling you. Busquets, Rakitic, and Artur, I'll trade those three right now for a future of Roger, Koke, and Saul, because those guys are all young.
I mean, hey, if you're looking to sell Rakitic, which...
I know you love him.
As is rumored. I love him so much. He's just criminally underappreciated.
You know where he's going to play? On the left wing.
Yeah.
He's going to be Koke's substitute or Saul's substitute on the left wing. And then he's going to play right back in certain games when Juanfran is injured again.
Juanfran's still playing at 40 years old.
Like, I'm sorry, you can't have talented central midfielders at Atleti. They don't play there. They just don't.
And you have Rodri this year, and Rodri's been great. Gabby and Thiago in the past were a great pair. But yeah, Koke has never made that move, and I don't think Koke is really ever going to make that move at this point. He's 27 now.
Yeah, but if he goes somewhere else, I don't think he's going to know how to play in the middle. Because that's just who he is. He's 27. He's just a left midfielder now, or a right midfielder. It's just who he is.
It's a sad situation.
Those three should be playing together in the middle from the start of the season, and then Atleti would be much better. I'm telling you.
I thought that's what was going to happen entering this season. I thought, okay, you have Rodri as like the deepest member of three, Koke and Sal running ahead of him, and then you have a 4-3-3 with Griezmann, Costa, and you know whoever you want to put on the right, whether it's Vitolo or Gelson or whoever, or Thomas Lemar, who has also kind of flopped this season. We're talking about.
Oh yes, I forgot about him.
Yeah, he didn't play in this game, and I don't think it would have made a difference. I don't think Atleti missed him.
Yeah, so like of all the really expensive signings that you've made over the last 2 years, the only one who has worked is the cheapest one, which is Rodri.
Right.
So, but it isn't because the other guys aren't good. It's just because they're not playing in the positions where they should be played.
That's basically it. They're not getting enough time to prove their worth because they're not working hard enough or. Whatever the case.
And when you get a guy like Gelson Martins, who is a ridiculous player, who's really good, you can't burden him with so many defensive responsibilities, which he had whenever he played.
Yeah, Cholo literally tried to play him at right back earlier in the season. Like, in September, he tried to play him at right back. And I'm like, bruh, what are you doing?
That's not him. He's
not a right back. He's a right winger.
Yeah. Or am I picking up like the wrong signals here, or are just Atleti fans not that big fans of Simeone anymore?
He's become kind of divisive. He really has. Not like Valverde level divisive, but you know, Barca fans just are Barca fans. But he's under the microscope now more than ever, and I think it's justified because we have now a track record of him kind of failing in the market, especially with big money signings who are asked to do a lot more or asked to do different things than their track record says they're good at. And you combine that with what has happened this season with, I think fans could forgive last season because it ended with a trophy, even though it was just the Europa League, it ended with a trophy and the Europa League run was just totally dominant. This season is a lot harder to forgive because of the way the team exited the Champions League. Just once again, not really coming close to challenging for the title in La Liga. And just more transfers just kind of falling flat. And you have a coach that is really under the gun. And he's just signed a 3-year extension as well, which didn't go over too well with a lot of members of the fan base.
Yeah, I just remember the time. I just thought that, you know, when people stay too long, like Pep Guardiola stayed one season too long at Barca. Had he left after the 2011 Champions League, he would have been a god. And he still left as kind of one of the most admired figures in the history of the club, but kind of he was exhausted by the end of it, and the team wasn't playing that well anymore. So I kind of think that's happened with Simeone. Like, if he left when the Inter rumors were really hot, if he left then, or even if he left last season with the Europa League title, with the dominant run that you talked about, that dude, he changed our club and he put us in a great position. But it's almost like he's holding it ransom now. I don't know if some people feel that way, and but it's starting to feel like Arsene Wenger towards the end. I don't know.
Yeah, that's been the comparison, is that Cholo is either going to be a Ferguson or he's going to be a Wenger. And it's kind of leaning toward the latter. And he's got, this summer is going to be a huge, huge summer for the club, because there is finally going to be like the big rebuild, and Simeone's going to get a chance to build his next great Atletico side. And if I still believe he's the right coach for this team, and I'm excited about to see what they do over the summer, but he's the highest paid coach in Europe, and he's going to end up being here for 10 years. You do expect results to go somewhat differently. Then again, we made this point on the last podcast that we did last week. Cholo has kind of become a victim of his own success in a way, because the first 2 or 3 years of his tenure were just so wildly successful and so wildly just out of the blue. The following years have become scrutinized a little bit differently. So while for most teams, this would be a good, for Atletico 10 years ago, this would have been a great season. For Atletico now, it's going to go down as an average season, and it's going to go down as a pretty disappointing season.
True. And to be fair, like, to be a little fair at least, like, this season of La Liga, it won't go down in history like this, just because Barcelona fans just don't want to give Valverde any credit. But this is quite possibly the most dominant title run from Barca in a long time. Because when Pep Guardiola was coach, there was the Mourinho Real Madrid team that always fought really hard with Barca for the title and actually won once. This Barcelona team, last season was kind of dominant. This one is seriously dominant. The last podcast we did was November, which was a preview of Barcelona at the Wanda, which was a 1-1 draw. 2 weeks before that, Barca lost to Real Betis at home 4-3.
Yeah.
That was November 11th, 2018. That was the last time Barca lost a game in La Liga.
The last time they lost was 6 months ago. I mean, listen, they're a great, you know this, they're a great team. They lost
two La Liga games all season. And none in 6 months.
Last year they lost only one. They lost three times in the last 69 games in La Liga. That's insane.
It's absolutely insane.
Like, yeah, I think that needs to be appreciated too, is just how historically great Valverde's Barca is. And Valverde does get a lot of stick. I think it's undeserved. A lot of it comes from, obviously, what happened last year in Rome. But Valverde, I think, is a great coach. And the players seem to really respond well to him. And I think it's not just the players they have and the talent they have, it's the mentality that they have. They have a real,
that's the crazy thing,
fighting mentality.
When we confirm the title this season, it's going to be 8 La Liga titles in 11 years.
Yeah.
8 in 11. That is Bayern Munich level dominance.
And Bayern Munich don't
have Atletico and Real Madrid in their league.
Yeah, Bayern have just a larger budget. They can outspend everybody. I mean, Dortmund have challenged them this year, but that's done now after what they did to Dortmund on Saturday.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, not so good.
So what you said is really true. That's the most underrated thing about Barca. They're not tired of winning, ever. Like, Madrid gave up on La Liga to win the Champions League. They did it 3 years in a row, congratulations, but that came at the expense of giving up on La Liga. They did win it once, to be fair, which is when they got La Liga in the Champions League, which is a great accomplishment. But the other two seasons that they won, and the 4 and 5 that they won, they gave up La Liga in almost every season.
And they're going to finish like 15 points back this season.
Yeah, because they gave up La Liga again. They actually gave up the whole season.
Yeah, they did.
But seriously, Barca never can give up La Liga for the Champions League. And in those 11 years that they are now going to win 8 La Liga titles, they've won the Champions League 3 times and may win it a 4th, which is the same as Real Madrid. And they never give up La Liga. So that's the thing. If you don't stop, if you never stop wanting to win, you're going to win. It's that simple. So, and this season has been especially dominant. The amount of late comeback, like the 4-4 against Villarreal, how many teams would come back from 4-2 with 8 minutes left?
There's just no margin for error against them. Yeah, that game was...
Think about it, like with that, even if they lost the game, they would have gone into the Atletico game 7 points ahead, and a win would have put them 10 points ahead, which is basically the same thing as now.
Yeah,
but they just didn't want to lose. It's not about the point. It's not about the gap to Atletico. It's about not losing the game.
It's the mentality, and I think that's an underrated, overlooked thing about Barcelona is that they still have that spirit, that mentality to win every game, and they basically do. I mean, they've lost only 3 times in La Liga the last 2 seasons. That's remarkable.
How many games did they lose only 3 times that you thought they said?
What?
You said they lost 3. I missed the stat. It's only 3 losses in the last?
In the last 2 seasons.
Well, how many games?
69 now.
Nice.
You were waiting for that. That was a setup.
I actually heard the stat. I really want to make the joke.
That was a setup. Well done.
Just wanted to make the joke. It's what I do, baby.
Oh, man. So, overall, a disappointing day, but still one of, I think, the Atletico fans are going to take it on the chin.
Another thing that pride. I forgot to mention.
Yeah.
That game felt like a final from the very beginning. Like, it was very clear that both teams knew how important the game is, and if Barca won, La Liga was over, and they both played like it. And that was very nice to see, because a lot of people weren't taking this as seriously. And I wrote in my preview, I was like, a lot of people don't take this game seriously, but you're going to see something different tomorrow. Like, both teams know how big this is. And even though Barca have a nice schedule, it doesn't matter. They're going to be under pressure if they lose. And they have Manchester United and Liverpool in the Champions League. So it's gonna become tough if they lose. Barca took it really seriously, and Atleti knew it was their last chance, and it really felt like it. So that's why maybe Valverde took some time to make the substitutions, because he was a little too cautious because he knew how big the game was. So if he did that in a final, if he made the substitution 10 minutes later and it still worked out, nobody would have talked about it. So. I just want to make the point that it really felt like a decisive game, which was maybe a surprise to some people, because I saw a lot of people thinking, a lot of people said to me, why do you think this game is so big? Because I was like, it is huge. What are you talking about?
This is the second biggest fixture in the country now.
Yeah.
Right behind El Clasico.
Yeah, and this season the Atleti Barca games were bigger than El Clasico in terms of their implications.
In terms of what they meant, yeah. And they kind of were last year, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when these two met at camp now last year, the gap was even closer. It was only 5 points then.
Yep. And you know what's funny? We set up this podcast, and I was like, I'm going to say this. So I listened to the last podcast, and I'm not making this up. I am not making this up, Mr. JB. You said before the first game of the season between Barca and Atleti at the Wanda that Atleti were going to win, close the gap, and show Barca that they're not the dominant force in Spain anymore. You said those words.
You actually went back and listened to it?
I actually went back and listened to it because I held on to those words forever.
Oh, my God.
And now I'm here to say I'm glad that you closed the gap to 11 points. Well done.
Hey, it was 14 last year. It's only 11 this year. So technically, yeah. I was right.
We're not the dominant force in Spain anymore, baby. You're right.
I was right.
You closed the gap.
I'm going to take full credit for that one. I know what you're trying to do. I'm going to take full credit for it.
Yeah, you did it. Great job. Great job.
Thank you for that. While I've got you, Renato, a couple Barca-related questions.
Yes, sir.
Umtiti, what do you think of his situation? He obviously was stuck to the bench in this game. He's been hurt basically the whole season. What do you think is going to happen to Umtiti this summer? Does he stay? Does he go?
Prediction. If we sign De Ligt, which is probably going to happen.
Boo.
If it's probably going to happen, I'm going to say it's going to.
You don't need him.
But if we sign De Ligt, Umtiti is gone. Because Clement Lenglet has proved that he's a really good center back.
He's really good, yeah.
And in the last podcast, we were discussing how he was kind of a competent backup to Umtiti. He's a legit starter now. Like, he's the first option alongside Piqué. And it's deservedly so. He's really good. So if the lead comes and then it's Piqué, the lead, and Lenglet as the three main options, Umtiti is gone because he's on really high wages. And Barca can get a really good price for him, which we can then invest in someone else. So if, and again, it's big if, because it's not done yet, but if Barca signed the lead, Umtiti is not at Barca anymore.
That makes sense to me. I mean, you're going to fetch a good fee for him, TD, too, because he's very good. It's kind of been a lost season for him because of the injuries.
It's unfortunate. And he's healthy again, but he just can't take Lenglet's place because Lenglet doesn't deserve to be a reserve again.
I didn't think Lenglet was going to be this good, honestly. I mean, he was good at Sevilla last year. I didn't know how big a step up this would be for him, but he's definitely held his own. He's been really good.
Yeah, he should start at Old Trafford, and I'd be shocked if it's Umtiti.
I'm gonna ask you the same question, but about Coutinho.
I wanted him gone.
He's Brazilian, though.
It doesn't matter. I'm a Barca fan before a Brazilian.
Okay.
But it's not because I don't like him. It's just he doesn't fit.
Yeah, he doesn't fit. He's never really fit. TB.
And like, if he's a winger. There's a better winger than him, than Bale. If he's a central midfielder, there's a better midfielder than him, Artur. So there's no place for him. He's too expensive. So I think you can still get some good money for him. Unfortunately, Chelsea can no longer sign, and I thought Chelsea were going to go really hard after him this summer. Hmm. So the Chelsea thing is out now. So that's sad. And Liverpool won't sign him anymore because Liverpool have done so well without him that they just don't need to sign him again. But I'm sure you can find people who want Coutinho. Who knows if Solskjaer wants to rebuild the Manchester United squad and looks at him. I don't know. But maybe Bayern wants him to replace Ribery. I don't. Again, all speculation. But I want him gone. I just don't think Barca are ready to give up on their biggest ever signing yet.
Which makes sense. You know, to try to save face, you want to keep him around as long as you can. But where is his role if Dembele is fit?
Yeah, that's a problem.
There's not really one. And he's not going to be the Iniesta replacement that some tipped him to be.
Yeah.
Because he's just totally different player.
And Rakitic is probably going to leave this summer.
I'll take him.
I won't say probably, but he will possibly leave if Inter are really as serious about him as they seem to be. Even if Rakitic leaves, a midfield of Arturo and Coutinho alongside Busquets, it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't.
Like, it just doesn't. And we're going to get De Jong, too, from Ajax. And this is the perfect... He's kind of the perfect teammate for Busquets right now, and he's the perfect Busquets replacement. So he's probably going to play every week, especially if Rakitic leaves, alongside Busquets. So there's just not a place for Coutinho, and he's too good for the match, but there's just no place for him at Barca. So it doesn't make sense for him not to play.
Who's going to be the Luis Suarez replacement?
Have no idea, and I don't think the club does either.
Yeah.
Honest answer.
Yeah.
There aren't a lot of good young strikers around right now.
Jovic, to be honest. Jovic is the one who's been linked the most.
I don't like him. I think, the 5 goals he scored in a game raised his profile a lot more than his actual game can produce. I don't think he's good enough. The one I actually really want is Timo Werner, but there's no way he's leaving Germany. After he leaves, if he leaves Leipzig, he's going to Bayern. Like, he's not going anywhere else.
Yeah, because that's usually the next step for the young German players is you go to Bayern.
Yeah, it makes sense for him,
too.
That's
just kind of how that works.
Yeah, he's kind of the perfect Lewandowski replacement. And Bayern are going to do that as soon as Lewandowski starts to decline or wants to leave. So it's just going to happen like that.
Yeah, and Bayern have already started to rebuild anyway. Which, by the way, Lucas Hernandez was at the Bayern Dortmund game rather than the Atleti Barca game yesterday.
Yeah, funny how that works.
Isn't it? Yeah. Isn't it amazing? Like, he's still under contract to Atletico.
But by the way, I love that. I love the way German clubs do business like that. Like, they just announce ahead of time, like, it's gonna be our player. Like, it's really professional. Like, and then it's up to the player to whether or not it affects them personally, but like, it's always like that. I think it's kind of cool. I wish Barca did it with De Jong, and De Jong's playing great at Ajax. Like, the De Jong deal has been announced since January, and it hasn't hurt him, so I think it's up to the player.
And he
to show commitment to the club, and I think it's clear Lucas is not showing commitment to Atleti.
No, Lucas is done. He checked out. I mean, he obviously checked out because his season is over with the knee surgery, and it's disappointing that he still couldn't be there to support the team.
Yeah, but it could still be around. Like,
yeah,
you're still an Atleti player. You're not a Bayern player yet.
Yeah, it's disappointing, and you'd expect that out of his brother, but not so much out of him. But oh well.
Don't mention Teo to me, please.
Why?
Well, he broke Aleix Vidal's leg when Aleix Vidal was finally becoming a Barcelona player.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. And now
Aleix Vidal is buried at the bench at Sevilla.
Yes, I totally forgot he tried to amputate Aleix Vidal's leg. I forgot about that.
And that was literally the moment where Aleix Vidal started. Barca fans were legitimately asking if they finally found the new Dani Alves, and he was playing like it. He was really good.
That was only 2 years ago. Wow.
And then Taylor Hernandez killed his career.
That was only 2 years ago.
That was crazy.
Yeah, and I remember that game and that play. That was a horrible play.
Yeah, it was on purpose. He wanted to break his leg. Like,
it was there's horrible. Yeah, so we both hate Taylor Hernandez. That's good.
Yes, and now you hate Lucas too, so congratulations. You hate all Hernandez brothers.
Yeah, never sign a Hernandez brother. I mean, Lucas just went after the checks. Like, Lucas, he just went after the money, which is fine. You know what? Bayern are going to pay him 4 times what Atletico paid him. I don't blame him so much for that.
Yeah, but like, even if you're injured, like, watch your team's game. Come on.
Yeah.
Even at home, put it on Instagram. Like, take a picture of the TV, turn the TV off, and go play video games.
Yeah, just...
But at least try to show your support.
Yeah, he didn't even try. He was just watching his, not even his team yet, but whatever. It's fine. This is fine.
And by the way, the way Byron played yesterday, you're not getting on that team easily, buddy. That's all I'm saying to you. It's not gonna be easy for you to get on that team.
5-0.
That team's really good.
5-0. Oof.
Byron are annoyingly good.
They're always good.
They're like the Spurs. And the Spurs are my team, but I still criticize the Spurs at times. Like, it's annoying how they keep winning. And in the last podcast, by the way, we discussed how the Spurs were probably going to miss the playoffs, and I told you they wouldn't.
And they're in. They're in. I mean, they're probably going to get the 8 seed, but they're in.
No, I think they're going to get the 7.
You think they get 7?
They have two really easy games. They have Cleveland and Dallas.
Oh, God. Yeah, they're going to get 7.
If they win both, they get the 7th seed because the Thunder and the Clippers play the Warriors.
Warriors,
in the regular season. If the Warriors beat any of them, the Spurs finish 7th.
The Thunder end the season with the Timberwolves today. Then they have the Rockets and the Bucks. Oh, God. They have the ball. On a back-to-back, they're in Milwaukee.
They have the Rockets, yeah. I just mean they have a tough game. And if the Clippers or the Thunder lose one game and the Spurs win both, the Spurs finish 7th. And I really want the Spurs finish 7th because I think we have a much bigger chance against Denver than people think. I don't think the Nuggets are experienced enough for the playoffs.
Like, I agree.
Youth in the playoffs is a real thing.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, the Warriors were good enough to win before in the last Mark Jackson year when they beat Denver, but then they just ran into the Spurs and they were too young for the Spurs. It might be the same thing with Denver. They might be too young for the Spurs.
Like, I love Denver's team. I love what they've done this year. I love Jokic with all my heart, but yeah, you're right. They just don't have that experience, and they can rely on Mile High and they can rely on their really, really good home record, but the Spurs have experience. That's going to be a long series if it's the 2-7 series.
I bet if the Spurs get the Nuggets, it's at least 7, if not the Spurs in 6. Because for
you're confident.
Game 6 is in San Antonio, and I think if the Spurs lead 3-2 going to Game 6 in San Antonio, they win the series. If they need to win Game 6 to force a Game 7, they do it too. But it's at least 7, if not Spurs in 6.
I like the confidence. And you know what? I don't think you're entirely wrong. It could be a long series.
Youth in the playoffs is a real thing. Real, real thing.
I mean, there just aren't that many. I mean, you have the Warriors a few years ago when they won their first title. But you just don't have that many young teams that go to the finals right away.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. When the Warriors won their first title... the Curry Warriors.
Yeah,
they had the experience of losing to the Spurs.
Yeah, the Spurs knocked them out. The Clippers knocked them out in 7. Then they went on to win the title the next year.
Yeah, so they were young, but they had the experience. So it's not necessarily just the youth; it's the being there. And the Nuggets haven't been there.
Denver wasn't there last year. No, I mean they've had a great season. And
last year they went to Minnesota for the playing game. Whoever won the game would go to the playoffs. And Denver had a better team. But Jimmy Butler is more experienced than any other of the Nuggets, and he won the game for the Timberwolves in last year. So I still think that experience in the playoffs and youth matters a lot, and the Spurs have more.
In the event that we don't convene before the end of the NBA playoffs, who you got winning the title?
The Warriors.
Hell yeah.
I mean, there's no one at their level. And the Boogie thing has gone much better than I thought. Not really as a player, because I don't think Boogie really impacts whether or not the Warriors are beatable or not. Even without him, they're still the best team. But he's playing well enough. He's giving more than they need from a center. And he's not destroyed their locker room, which is a huge plus.
Yes.
Because that was my biggest worry. I thought Boogie was going to destroy the locker room, especially with Draymond. But everybody loves him, and he loves everybody. So
he's been a
choir, they're fine, right? And they're going to win everything. I think they're going to sweep the first two rounds of the West. I think they're going to win. They're going to beat the Rockets because I think it's going to be Warriors-Rockets again in the Western Finals. And I don't think the Warriors are going to let it go to seven this time. I think they win it in five or six. And then if they get whoever they get in the finals, it's going to be fun, but the Warriors won't let it get to seven.
And here's my thing with the Dubs. If they get the Thunder in round one, I think that's going to be a long series. I would rather not see the Thunder in round one.
I think they sweep.
Really?
The Thunder are just not good. Like, Russ can be as intense as he wants to be, but Paul George is clearly injured, and that matters.
Yeah, he's been slumping like the last month. Like, there was talk that he would be in the MVP consideration, and he's just been slumping ever since.
Yeah, he's clearly injured. It's affecting his shooting. If he shoots 30% from three in the Warriors series like he's shooting now, they get swept. It might be a hot take, but I'm sorry. The Thunder can't hang with the Warriors for more than four games. Not this version of the Thunder with Paul George injured. Just isn't happening.
Their defense is still really good, but if George isn't hot, it takes.
They can't score enough. They can't score enough.
Their offense takes a huge hit if George isn't right.
Yeah, and even though Russ got a 20-20-20, which is awesome.
Oh, that was just unbelievable that he did that.
He's not getting a 20-20-20 against the Warriors. He's just not. Like, the Warriors are not going to let him have 20 assists, let alone 20 rebounds, because Boogie's there now, and he's a great rebounder. So, I'm sorry. I just don't see it. Don't see it. But I'm more excited about the East. The East is going to be fun, man.
Yeah, who's going to come out of the East?
If the top four survives the first round, I think the most dangerous one to go off is Boston. But if Boston survives Indiana in the first round, I have no idea who wins it. I'm honest.
I don't trust the Celtics. They've just been so up and down this year. I don't trust them.
You know who I don't really trust? And that's a hot take? Milwaukee.
It comes down to experience again.
And it's not just that. Yeah, the strategy is Giannis and shooters. Giannis is going to be Giannis. I know Giannis is going to happen in the playoffs. But I don't know if the shooters will.
They are not
good enough for the playoffs.
They have enough shooting to get out of the East. They absolutely do. Just it's a matter of if they're going to show up.
Like, they don't have a Klay Thompson. Now, I'm not even going to talk about Curry. I'm talking Klay. They don't have a Klay Thompson.
And Chris Middleton's probably the best they've got in that.
Yeah, round. But Chris Middleton is a really streaky shooter. Like, last playoffs, he was awesome. I don't know if it's going to be this one. You'll never know with Chris Middleton. He just goes on his really bad runs at times, and if he saves the bad runs for the playoffs, they're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, and I can see Philly coming out of the East. I can see.
I like Toronto a lot.
I do too, but they have that history.
No, but they're not facing LeBron, and that's a big deal.
That's a good point. And they have Kawhi. Like,
They're gonna look at any team and they're not gonna see LeBron, and that's a big deal.
Kawhi.
It might not seem like nothing, but it is. Like, oh, don't get to face LeBron in the playoffs. We're free. You can't win now. And Kawhi is seriously good season.
Yeah.
I hate to see him playing so well, but
yeah, I bet you have some anger toward him still.
Every game winner he gets is like a dagger to my heart.
I bet.
But that dude is good. And Marc Gasol has been great. Kyle Lowry is the biggest question mark. He's not great in the playoffs. But I think he can be this time. Pascal Siakam is just a beast.
Siakam's been amazing this year.
Yeah, he's a beast.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I'm really looking forward to the playoffs. I think it's going to be one of the best playoffs we've had in a while, because last year was bad. Even like the conference finals, which both went to seven, it wasn't really a compelling seven. It was just like the East final was just, okay, LeBron doesn't want to play this game, is not really interested, or is saving himself for the next. Okay, the Celtics are going to win. So LeBron decided to take over now. Okay, fine. And the other series is just the Warriors were letting the Rockets play a little bit. And then they decided in the second half of game 6 and 7, okay, we're going to take it seriously. and they won the series easily. And when they decided, whenever they decided to play, they just bordered the Rockets. So
yeah, I mean that series did have some drama, though. I mean, I know Celtics Cavs went to seven, but it was really just a matter of, you know, when's LeBron going to drop that signature performance, and it was Game Seven in Boston. Was when
but
he
yeah,
decided to drop
Western
it.
Conference Finals. Were you really in doubt that the Warriors are going to lose?
There was a period where, you know, they lose Game Four at home. They lose a very tight game in Game 5, and you think, okay, they might win Game 6, but Game 7 in Houston, especially getting down by 16 in Game 7, you thought, yeah, this isn't looking
good. Yeah, I thought Game 7, okay, there's a shot here, but then they started the second half with a couple of threes from Curry, and I was like, yeah, forget it.
Yeah, forget it. They're still down 10, but forget it.
literally all it took was two threes from Curry, and I was like, it's over here. Let's get ready for the finals.
So you got who you got? Warriors you got in finals?
Warriors Raptors.
Warriors Raptors finals, okay. I've got Warriors there and I'll say Philly. Yeah, I'll say Philly.
Yeah, you really like Philly. I don't like Philly that much.
I don't think their talent has gelled yet, but they have talent. They have a lot of talent.
Yeah, but and that's like the difference between them and Milwaukee, right? Milwaukee was like, we're not going to build talent. We have one ultra special player, and we're just going to complement him with role players. The Sixers are going to be like, okay, no role players, just superstars. Let's see what happens. And let's see which strategy is going to work.
The East is going to be really, really interesting this year, especially since LeBron's
not the first round. The first round is going to be brutal. Especially, like, apart from the Brooklyn series, whoever Brooklyn plays is going to be really fun. Yeah. But the other three series are not going to be great. Maybe Boston, Indiana, but I think if Boston wins the first two games at home, that one's over.
Which they probably will, because Indiana.
Yeah, they got home court. They're playing really well now. Gordon Hayward is looking seriously good.
I still don't quite trust them, especially with the way the East is stacked up. They're probably going to play Milwaukee in round two. And I don't think they'll beat Milwaukee.
Yeah. But if they beat Milwaukee in round two...
just chaos. It's absolute chaos.
Then I won't bet against them making the finals. If they beat Milwaukee, like, the confidence they'll get from that... And I'm a believer in confidence. Maybe... more than other people. I think confidence really matters.
Mm-hmm.
It's what I was arguing when... if Barca lost to Atleti, fine, it was a 5-point game. Barca have a nice schedule. But Atleti have the momentum now. And Barca will be under pressure. And they'll face Manchester United and Liverpool in the Champions League. Their confidence might not be as high. And then they drop... and then they get a draw, a weird draw there. And it's down to three. Like, it's a big deal, confidence and momentum. I believe it a lot. And... like whoever gets a big upset in one of the first rounds of the playoffs, that's gonna be interesting, especially Boston. If Boston upsets Milwaukee, man, I won't bet against them making the finals. Even though I said Toronto, if it's like Toronto Milwaukee in these finals, I think Toronto wins. If it's Toronto Boston, I just don't know.
I'm excited, man. It's gonna be great.
Me too. It's gonna be fun.
All right, man. Well, let's wrap there. This has been Baronato flying high again. This was great. Renato Gonsalves, thank you so much for joining me on this edition of Colts Narrow Chat.
Thank you, buddy. It was fun as always.
Where can the people follow you and read your writing?
Follow the Barca Blaugranas page on Twitter at Blaugranas Barca and read BarcaBlaugranas.com. It's a great website. It's run by the great Joe Clark, and I'm there sometimes, and the coverage is awesome, and you should read it, and read it as much as you can, and also read the Into the Calderon, which is great, and listen to the Coach in the Chat. I'm plugging everybody.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. You can follow me on Twitter at JBBaron. All my Atletico stuff is there, in addition to my Phoenix Rising stuff, if you're at all interested, dear listener. Also, follow Into the Calderon on Twitter at Into the Calderon. You can like ITC on Facebook at facebook.com/Into the Calderon. Subscribe and listen to Colch Narrow Chat on your favorite podcasting platform, and become a Colch Narrow Chat amigo at patreon.com/ColchNarrowChat. You'll get access to our bonus pods and a lot more cool stuff. So head on over there from as little as $3 a month. You too can join the movement. All right, we'll be back next week. Until then, adios.